This episode is brought to you by UiPath. Human achievement can be slow. 200,000 years to go from the wheel to your jalopy? Really? But today, 90% of the Fortune 500 are accelerating human achievement simply. When AI is everywhere, every process can be automated and accelerated. 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 UiPath, the AI everywhere foundation of innovation.
Exclusively on Paramount Plus. Get ready to explore like never before.
Swiper, no swiping.
Oh man!
Swing into action.
We need your help.
Woo-hoo!
Yay!
With a girl who put adventure on the map.
I don't think I can do it, Dora.
I'll protect you, Boots. Together, we got this.
Todos juntos.
Yeah!
Dora, the brand new series. Stream with your family now, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Welcome to the show. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and I'll tell you why I'm starting to worry about the Eagles quarterbacks and why Eli Manning is going to make Jalen Ramsey eat his words. Speak for yourself starts now. What will your words actually taste like? I mean, I guess you put garlic on it.
Chicken.
Garlic and salt.
It's organic.
Everything tastes like chicken.
Jalen Ramsey's words are meaty.
They are meaty. They got some meaty. Hello and welcome. Cowherd Whitlock still off. You're welcome. So I'm joined by a couple of longtime NFL players, Greg Jennings, who won a Super Bowl, Rashad Jennings. They are not related. Matter of fact, they may come to Duke just a little bit later on in the show. And the founder of the Big Lead, Jason McIntyre himself. Follow him on IG. He'll like you. Right, let's start in New England, shall we? You love it. Come on. Where Tom Brady made his preseason debut last night and looked very much like, well, Tom Brady. Played the entire first half, throwing two touchdowns and picking apart the Eagles team that crushed his soul back in February. Afterwards, Brady tried to explain why he played so much in a meaningless preseason game.
Yeah, I know. It's the first time kind of had to do that in 6 months or 7 months. So it's, you know, I feel like my timing, you know, can be better in certain areas. And but it's good. I mean, you have to get out there and play. And I've been doing it for a long time, so a lot of it is kind of second nature at this point. But still, you got to see yourself do it and, you know, kind of get the instincts back and the feel of the game and the speed of the game and so forth. But, you know, anytime I can, you know, buy a little time here and there, it's been good for us.
Guys, I get the idea of getting reps and getting sharp and getting rhythm, especially when you have some new wide receivers that you're going to work in. And you get Julian Edelman back for the first time on a football field since last training camp. But I felt like there was at least a tinge of this, maybe more than a tinge, a good amount of this, which is sending a little bit of a message. We've spent time on this show. Jason, you've been here. Whitlock and Cowherd have spent a ton of time talking about the dysfunction or reported dysfunction within the Patriots front office and even their coaching staff. Not just losing guys to other teams like Matt Patricia, but the idea that Belichick and Brady weren't seen eye to eye. The idea that some of the team's still mad that they didn't get an explanation why Malcolm Butler didn't play in the Super Bowl. And, look, they were trolled continually by the Philadelphia Eagles after the Eagles won the Super Bowl. I just felt like this was a putting a finger in the air and not an index finger, not a word number one. It's a blank you to all the haters. We're still the Patriots. You come to New England, you know, you're going to get a two-piece on that scoreboard. And Tom Brady played a little bit longer than he should have. They scored a few more points than they should have. Helped by the strip sack, but I thought the defense even played with more energy than normally you see in a preseason game. I felt like this was the Patriots sending a message to the Eagles, to the fans, to the haters. We're still the Pats. AFC runs through us.
Does Bill Belichick send messages in August? It just feels a little early to send a message to the NFL. I will say, though, Brady threw 24 passes all last preseason, 26 in one game. So there is maybe something there. I wonder if that's Bill saying, hey, Tom, you didn't show up at voluntary workouts. You're going to get an extra quarter in or an extra series. Maybe something like that. But this is a team that lost an offensive lineman, one of Tom's trusted tackles. Working in new receivers, because Edelman will miss the first four games. No Danny Amendola. And the running back situation is kind of by committee right now. They don't know what they're going to do. They're back there with Deion Lewis gone. So I just feel like this is a Patriots team that kind of wants to work in all the pieces. And remember, nobody plays preseason game four. So game three next week, they'll only have a half. Not much time left to get ready for the season.
Right. Game three, it's normally a half. Game two for it to be a half. Were the Patriots sending a message?
Maybe a smudge, but I'm more on the side of no. I think this had a lot to do with what Tom Brady said. He's trying to get back into the instincts of playing football, playing quarterback, developing that chemistry with a receiving group that is completely new, outside of Julian Edelman, who wasn't even out there last night. So when I look at this team and when I look at what they did last night, it was a matter of Tom Brady making sure I can identify with what you're going to do in a game with a defender who's not one of our own in practice across from you, so I can start to develop some key notes and some tips on what you like to do, and so you can get a feel of what I like to do as a quarterback, because ultimately I'm going to make it happen. I'm going to make it do what it do, as he's always done. No message needed to be sent. This is just a team who understands the usage of a preseason game, which is to tune themselves up.
I agree. I don't think this is a message to anybody specific. You're dealing with Tom Brady, who was a competitor. He loves to compete. It probably irks him to be on the sideline, actually. So being out there, getting the timing down, as he had mentioned, he wanted to get the timing down, get some of the rust off, get in gel and sync and the chemistry, as Greg had mentioned, with his football team. It's not a message, other than he's going to be ready for this season. Now, you take an account, what, this is his 18th season?
Yeah.
I mean, they're on the brink of, what, the 10th title in their division. I don't think this is a message to anybody. I think this is just them saying, this is why we are successful, because we have starters that want to go out there and compete.
10 straight title. But it has to change a little bit when it's the Eagles, right? Just the first time you see him, it just happens to be.
Maybe the defense. The defense felt like, hey, we got shredded by Nick Foles.
Sure.
We're going to show you what we're made of. And Claiborne, the new guy coming from Atlanta, he looked good last night. He looked real sharp.
Well, and that's one of the things that this team lacked last year, right? They had no playmakers on the defensive side of the ball. They were able to survive in spite of it. You know, they helped out a little bit by the draw. You get the Titans and you get the Jags, and nobody believes in Blake Bortles. Even the Jags didn't believe in Blake Bortles in the AFC Championship game, you know, choosing to take a knee at the end of the first half. But I think Claiborne, it's a great example of, they need somebody out there to make a play, and last night, off the edge, pass rush, they made some plays.
They did, and when I look at Claiborne, this is classic New England.
Yes.
Picking up a guy who showed a flash, who has so much upside and potential, but they find out a way to pull it all out of them, make it work in their system the way they want it to get done. This is nothing new to the New England Patriots. Again, no slap on the Eagles. Yes, have the Eagles been trolling them all offseason? Yeah, and rightfully so. They beat them. So what? Suck it up. Deal with it. It's a new season. They know this game means nothing other than it gives us an opportunity to get better.
All right, to the night's other starter, Nick Foles, who didn't look anything like the guy who pulled off last year's miraculous run to the Super Bowl, going just 3 for 9 before fumbling and leaving the game with a strained shoulder. With Carson Wentz's return still up in the air, the uncertainty of the quarterback is starting to add up a little bit in Philadelphia. And guys, we talked about this earlier in the week. It's totally different when you're the champions. You know, when you're the hunter as opposed to the hunted. And look, Nick Foles was great in the Super Bowl, and he was good in the NFC Championship game. But when he was first put in as installed as starter, he was not. You go back to his times with the Rams, and he was not, right? Water does find its level. And so he was under duress, and he looked very much like St. Louis Rams or early Philadelphia Eagles, Nick Foles. And then you run the risk of putting Carson Wentz back in too early. Carson Wentz didn't get hurt at the start of last year. It was towards the end of last year. I fear rushing Carson Wentz or playing Nick Foles a little bit too much. And of course, they're dealing without Alshon Jeffrey. I know that Jason, they're returning so many players from injury. Some didn't play last night. And then not necessarily the pressure, but the idea that every game they go and play is now their opponent's biggest game. Hey, the Eagles. Not just a first-place schedule, but they're the defending champs. They talked a lot of trash. They talked about how nobody believed in us. I just think the quarterback predicament on the micro level is what, on the macro level, I'd be most concerned about with the Eagles. Everyone who follows football says this is a talented team on paper, talented enough to go back and repeat. But often the most talented team doesn't win because of injuries, because of dysfunction, or because of some of these other factors, like when you install Carson Wentz or playing against teams when you get their best shot.
Well, Doug, if we looked at them this offseason, we would say the Eagles have the best quarterback situation in the league, right? You got a guy who was the MVP leader probably in November last year, Carson Wentz, and a guy who just won the Super Bowl MVP. So now I'm going to panic because maybe Nick Foles got hurt last night. They still have, according to Pro Football Focus, the best offensive line in the NFL. Yes, ahead of the Cowboys. That's how they graded out last year. So I saw a coach in Peterson who last year schemed Nick Foles to victory against Mike Zimmer's Vikings, the great defense, and Bill Belichick, a great defensive mind. So I have no concerns about the Philly Eagles quarterback situation.
No concerns whatsoever.
None.
Wow. I do have concerns because you do have injuries looming. And to your point, which is what I've said even on Undisputed earlier, this is Nick Foles back in the position where we once first saw him. Starting, not coming off the bench, being the second guy, taking over a team with no pressure. No, you have all the pressure on you now because now our expectation is to see that MVP type caliber play that you put up in the Super Bowl week one. And what we saw last night obviously wasn't that. And I just don't know if Nick Foles goes down. You mentioned Carson Wentz rushing him back too soon. He's a mobile guy. Coming off a torn ACL, he has to make sure that he trusts his knee to be able to make some of those plays that we saw him make and play at the level that we obviously know he's capable of. And to rush him back, it's not good for the Eagles. You need Nick Foles to step in and play great, and he's not doing it right now.
Rashad, I'm fascinated by your opinion on this, having played in this division, knowing no one's repeated as division champions since, I think, 2004. So you're talking 14 years now. What are your thoughts on the challenges of the Eagles, specifically starting with the quarterback position?
I mean, it's going to be difficult. Obviously, Commander-in-Chief, whoever's playing quarterback of your ball club is pivotal to the success. And obviously, you have two guys that are starters in the NFL, my opinion, in both quarterbacks. So when you look at one that went down, and I even can speak to Foles, he was the player that actually threw for 7 touchdowns when I was with the Oakland Raiders. I watched him, kind of sling the ball around. He's capable, but we know what he's capable of. Obviously, he has some downfalls, but what quarterback really doesn't? I would say he's getting him healthy. They're a great team with him. Any quarterback that's out there playing injured, it's going to be difficult. I'm not concerned because of the totality of the Philadelphia Eagles, but obviously this division and how much blood is always out, they can smell it.
How different is it when you're defending champs as opposed to when you're trying to get to that trophy?
It's completely different. It's a completely different mindset. I think having been in that position, you understand that everybody is going to take their best shot because when they look at their schedule, they're looking at, oh, we got the Packers. This is an opportunity to see what we're really made of. Oh, we got the Eagles. This is an opportunity to see how we match up. This is the Super Bowl defending Super Bowl champ. So you're going to get everybody's best shot, as you alluded to. And I think over this offseason, we've kind of seen and heard the Lane Johnsons and some of their off-the-field things kind of creep in to kind of make us wonder, are they locked in? Mm. And I'm not a big fan of the whole Super Bowl hangover because you got to play the game, but I don't know if this won't be the case for the Philadelphia
Week
Eagles.
Week one, Atlanta Falcons. And remember that game, that playoff game? They nearly beat the Eagles on the road at 4th down, stalled at the 2-yard line. Week one's going to be a tough one if Carson Wentz isn't there.
Wait, so I don't understand. Are you taking both sides of this thing?
No, I'm not picking the Atlanta Falcons to go to the Super Bowl. That's what I'm doing. But I do believe that their quarterback situation's fine. I think Foles and Wentz, both very good quarterbacks. I'm not seeing a major issue at quarterback. Plus, as you said, this is one of the best rosters. It's either Eagles or Vikings, really, in the NFL, who's got the best roster. So
yeah,
it'll be all right.
But you made another point, though, in that Atlanta was really close. You like Atlanta to get
Love
the Super
Atlanta
Bowl. Think about losing Dalvin Cook and working with Case Keenum. Now you have what I think would be a better quarterback in Kirk Cousins. Okay. There's so many injuries. Giants are just besieged by so many injuries in the NFC. NFC, better teams in the AFC. And I think that even though the Eagles could have better talent than they had last year because they'd be fully healthy, so too will everybody else in the NFC. Hi, welcome back to Greg Jennings, Rashad Jennings, and Jason McIntyre. Let's move to New York, shall we? Where Jets fans got a stiff dose of reality last night with Sam Darnold coming back to earth, throwing his first pick of his pro career in an underwhelming performance during his first start. Now, on the bright side, Teddy Bridgewater put together a solid game, and afterwards, head coach Todd Bowles made it clear he still has no idea who's going to be his week one starter.
It's already been cloudy, so it's never changed. It's the same. It's a tough choice. We've still got 2 more games to play, so we'll go from there. I thought they played well. I thought they were gritty, had some adverse situations, but they hung in there tough and they played well. I understand the two interceptions. We don't like the turnovers, but I thought they fought and they played in some tough situations in last week, and I thought they handled it well.
Now, Bridgewater threw a pick as well, so let's be fair. Sam Darnold threw a pick. He was under duress. And, look, we've had this discussion on a couple different shows, and I just continue to come back to you can always go to start Sam Darnold. But once you start Sam Darnold, you can't pull him and start Teddy Bridgewater. You can't do that to a number three pick that you moved heaven and earth to get. Teddy Bridgewater is a great asset. Yeah, remember, he led the Minnesota Vikings to the playoffs, had that terrible knee injury. He's incredibly well-respected, and people around the league think he could be a starter for some of their teams or at least a viable backup. Then you have Josh McCown, who started for you last year and kind of surprisingly actually won you some games when everybody thought you were tanking. I look at Sam Darnold, and I just don't understand the rush. It's the Jets with the worst offensive line in football, maybe the worst tight end group in football. The wide receivers are decent, but it's not like anybody's picking them on their fantasy team. The running backs aren't going to put up numbers because the offensive line's not opening holes, and it's not like you got the greatest running backs on earth. With all that said, you got a 21-year-old quarterback who started for a year and three quarters. If he's going to be your quarterback for the next 10 years, he can sit for 2, 3, 4, 5, 8, 16 games. Doesn't matter to me. I believe in Sam Darnold. I think he's processing things appropriately. But I just fear a David Carr situation where you put a guy in and he develops bad habits and maybe he gets a little happy feet. He gets one of those twitches where he can't seem to kind of lock in. He runs it too much and he never lives up to his potential because the first year set him back, not because of his own growth or his own preparedness for starting the position, because of the team around him. This team doesn't have the talent to compete and to protect him.
Why you got
to
be so negative, Doug? Come on, put a positive spin on it. Don't think about Carr in Houston. Think about my man Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, okay? They drafted him out of North Dakota State, said, oh, we're going to sit him for the year. We got Sam Bradford to be the starter. They even brought in Chase Daniel as the backup so Wentz could hold the clipboard. As the second Minnesota had a quarterback injury, they shipped Sam Bradford out. They put Carson Wentz in as the starter. Okay, the Jets are waiting for another quarterback in the league to get hurt, ship Teddy Bridgewater out, and insert Sam Darnold as the starter. We know there are going to be hiccups, whether they come now, October, December, whenever. I just say let it go right now. Let him fire on all cylinders. They have a soft opening. I don't see why you don't just start your 21-year-old franchise quarterback week one.
And that, to me, I personally feel like Teddy is the guy. You know, Teddy is a guy to me. He's 17 for 23, 2 touchdowns. Yes, they both thrown a pick. We got to remember, too, especially if Teddy is healthy, what he was doing in Minnesota. He was supposed to be the commander-in-chief over there with the Vikings, leading the NFC heavyweight over there with the Vikings, right? They were good. They needed him. So I take him, who was injured off of air. He's coming back healthy. I think he could be the guy for the Jets, especially starting off. You alluded to not having the best offensive line. When you talk about pass protection, that's huge for a quarterback.
And we've seen this the last couple of years, guys. Offensive lines, especially now, are slow to come around, even the good ones. You know, you ask these offensive lines, like, look, we don't get the reps we used to. It's about working together. So even the best offensive line, sometimes Patriots, for example, they took the first 4 games and they're like, that's just extended training camp because we don't have 2-a-days. We don't work as we work in shells more than we work in full pads. And so good offensive lines take a while to come around. This is not a good offensive line. And that's just my biggest concern. Am I crazy to have that concern?
No. And if you're afforded an opportunity to study a little longer for a big test, wouldn't you take that?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is where the Jets are. They have Josh McCown. Number one, he's their guy. He's their guy. Teddy, I don't even know if they really are going to have Teddy in the mix because of something you alluded to earlier. They may use him as trade bait. So I look at this situation and say, if I have the opportunity and the luxury to sit my future, my franchise quarterback, and let him learn a little more. Let us solidify some things along our offensive line and our receiving core, put some pieces around him that he can grow with, then I'm going to do that. Not to mention, we're watching him in the preseason, where the level of play is a lot different from preseason to week one.
Absolutely.
These defensive linemen are going to be thinking about their numbers and their sacks. The pressure is going to mount. You don't want a young quarterback going into a season with a poor offensive line, to your point, and being rattled, and then it's staying with him throughout the course of the season, because then you have no option. You're not going to anybody. You're not gonna unplug him and put in somebody else, because this is all you have. This is your future. This is what your fans are paying the jerseys and coming to the games for, because of this young man right here. So when I look at their situation, I have the opportunity to sit him and let him continue to learn and study, and then take the test a little later down the road.
But, Greg, are you speaking from the head coach point of view or the owner? Because, you know, there could be two different things at play here. We got a head coach in Todd Bowles who, it's fair to say, he's opening the season on the hot seat, okay? He has not done any – he's only gone downhill since he came to the Jets. I mean, I know they haven't had many players. Do you want to try to win with Bridgewater and maybe extend your job, or say, hey, let me play Sam Darnold, show you guys – year two, we're going to make that leap from year one. I think you got to go with Darnold if you're Bowles.
Well, first of all, I would agree with you that Bowles is on some sort of hot seat because it's the Jets. We'd also agree he did a way better job last year than anyone could have conceived.
Five wins, I mean, yeah.
Yes, but people thought they were going to win zero games.
I did too, yeah.
Okay, so if he won five games, like, I actually think he did a really nice job in a really hard situation considering the cap hell. And they're playing for next year. Everybody knows it. They got like $90 million in cap room, which means at the end of this year, before the year ends, they can make some trades before the football year recycles March 1st, right? So, look, they're not playing for this year. And it's not an all or nothing thing. You don't have to sit him for the whole time. You don't have to sit him for the whole game. You can play, you know, bring him in the fourth quarter and let him. We all know you learn more from playing. You learn more from doing. We're not saying that you have to sit him the entire season. But just the idea of starting in week one because we think he's going to be great. And why? Why? Because if he fails early, guys can lose their confidence, and fans can lose their confidence.
Wait a second. Jared Goff didn't start early. He came in midseason, went 0-8.
I agree. People
were calling him a bust, and then in year two, Jared Goff was like, whoa, new coach, slinging arrow. I mean, they might hit the playoffs in his second year.
No, there's no question that Jared Goff is the answer to anyone who says you can't be terrible the first year, lose your confidence, and regain it the second year. You're right there. But you'd also point out that they had talented wide receivers. They brought in one of the best player callers in the NFL. They had Todd Gurley behind him. They fixed the offensive line.
Todd Bowles made them. Right.
So there's a lot of they ran a high school offense his first year to an elite pro offense. There are a lot
Jeff
of things
Fisher
changed.
Would disagree with you there.
Jeff Fisher's offense was a couple guys go long, and if we don't hand it off, we'll chuck it up to you or try and get open. That was generally what they were doing. Hey, welcome back. Greg Jennings, Rashad Jennings,
Jason. Duval!
They're back. Hey, did they win the game after he took the microphone? No, they lost that game. Let's return to the NFL. Eli Manning will take the field tonight against the Lions. His first action since Jags corner Jalen Ramsey called out Manning and essentially everyone else who plays quarterback in the NFL, a profile that was in GQ this week. Ramsey's main knock on Eli was that he was no good without Odell Beckham Jr. And while Eli was bad after Odell Beckham Jr. went down last year, he was also pretty much bad when Odell was on the field. So I guess the question is Eli going to make Jalen Ramsey eat his words? And I think the answer is yes. And it's not because I'm a huge Eli Manning fan.
Yes, you are.
No. I respect how Eli Manning has played during the very few, but very fruitful playoff runs for the New York Giants. But, dude, you got Sterling Shepard, I think, is a stud. I like what they have at tight end. Mm-hmm. And I love Odell Beckham Jr., who's properly motivated and seems to have his business in order as he's searching for that big contract. And then, oh, yeah, by the way, they fixed the offensive line. They added a quality running back. I still would have drafted Sam Darnold. This is not about whether or not they made the right pick in the NFL draft. You draft a quarterback when you're the Giants because you're never in the top five, and you can find a running back in the second, third, or fourth round. But, look, he's got dudes out there to throw to. And he has, I think, the best opportunity to find that one last kick in his career, whether it's just one or maybe 2 years. I like what the Giants are throwing out there because you have three viable weapons and a Saquon Barkley and fixing the left side of the line. This is a team that's going to see ridiculous improvement. The level of the amount of injuries that they had last year, no quarterback would have been able to play well. You lost all three of your top wide receivers. Then you changed the line and the running back. I do think that Jalen Ramsey will look a little bit foolish once you look at the overall stat total of Eli Manning when they match up.
Yeah, you know what, Doug? I disagree. I think they did pick the right draft. But I do agree with you. I believe Jalen will have to eat his words, so to speak. But, you know, his words specifically, I think he had said that he believes Eli wasn't good. He believes the connection of Odell and Eli is great, and he believes Odell is good. I just have to say that I believe Eli is good, period. That's the only place me and him disagree. You know, you got the course of the season that's going to take place. Eli's going to come out motivated. He has a lot to prove. Like you alluded to, all the players that he has on his team, and I do especially love the tight end. He spreads out that offense. He's going to be in the best position to play well. The defense is going to come out and play well. And we know defense helps offense be in the best position. So at the end of it, I don't know if he's going to eat his necessary words per se exactly, because it's his opinion. I mean, he can go out and ball.
There's also, benefits from the idea of, let's say the Giants go out there and light up the Jags and Odell has a good game. It's like, well, yeah, I told you, you have Odell, so you're going to be good.
That's not happening. Come on. We're talking about Eli Manning, who was benched last year for Geno Smith. I know you're a Giants guy. Listen, it's been a rough career for Eli Manning. I know he has two Super Bowl wins and he beat the Patriots, but he's never won an MVP, never sniffed a regular season MVP award. Led the league in interceptions three times. Career pass completion percentage under 60%. I mean, he's had a weird career. I don't think Eli can back it up here against Jalen Ramsey.
How many Super Bowl MVPs?
He does have the two Super Bowl MVPs. Yes, two great games against the Patriots. Greg, I just don't see it happening. I think it's over for Eli Manning.
Well, let me address this really quick. You're totally biased right now.
What's going on?
Eli's like a decent quarterback that has played really well in big games and big moments. Will Jalen Ramsey eat his words? I think that he will, but I think to Jalen Ramsey's point, it's going to be because of the guys around Eli, not because of Eli. Yeah. And so what I mean by that is all the weapons he gets back, as you mentioned, you get Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram, Odell Beckham, obviously the number one weapon that Eli has had. I mean, when we look at the stats, Eli's passer rating when targeting Odell Beckham is 110.
Yeah. Ain't going to be 110 against Jalen Ramsey.
Without Odell, when he's targeting everybody else, it's 83 or lower. So, I mean, Jalen Ramsey has a valid point.
Well, we didn't even mention Saquon Barkley. I mean, that guy's going to light the league on fire. He's supposed to be awesome. But, again, we're talking about Eli Manning, a guy who's at the tail end of his career. We would agree on that, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what makes you so sure that offensive line's going to hold up? I mean, when you come out week one against the best defense in the league and Jalen Ramsey's going to be talking trash and A.J. Bouye and that defensive line, guys, Eli Manning's going to have some trouble.
That's why you get a Nate
Fighter. I didn't say they're going to win a Super Bowl. Like, I'm not sitting here going, like, Giants to Super Bowl. Good night. Good luck.
Playoffs? Right. Are you going playoffs?
No, I don't think they're a playoff. But they were awful last year. They earned the second pick in the draft. But, like, look, no, it doesn't matter who the quarterback is. You take away all his top three wide receivers, he's not going to be any good, especially when it was a team built around the offense last year. That's why they made the offensive coordinator the head coach to help Eli Manning. And look, what Dave Gettleman, he comes from Carolina, and what did he do for Cam Newton? It was about their offensive line and about their defense and their running game, and they fixed that offensive line, right? They go and get one of the elite guards in the country to play left tackle. They go and get Nate Solder, who's played and won a Super Bowl at left tackle. So they have a tackle, they have a guard, and I'm not a big Saquon Barkley is going to be the next coming at running back. He had five 100-plus yard games, but he's viable. He's athletic. He can run it, he can catch, he can pass protect. He's a good player right away. I don't know if he'll be a superstar, if he'll be a Zeke Elliott, for example, or a Todd Gurley. Doesn't matter. The point is, now you have to keep the defense honest and potentially put eight in the box. You got to put two over on Odell's side. And then you have guys on the other side, like a Sterling Shepard, who can make plays, and Evan Ingram. Like, there's legit weapons there. So while it may prove him right, it'll prove him wrong, because I do think, Eli, if you give a guy who's smart enough and seen all the wars and seen all the defense enough time, he's going to make some plays.
He's definitely going to make plays all day long. Look, the offense has a lot of different weapons. We can't even argue that. He has many weapons. And so every single quarterback who is wet that we will put in our top five or phenomenal, typically they've played under the same exact system year in and year out, that quarterback that we would say. Right. And Eli has been going through different offensive coordinators, change personnel, change this, change that. I think bringing back somebody that's been in house before, understands the optics, are going to help tremendously. So I'm excited to see them get back on the field. Obviously, yes, I'm biased. There's no doubt about that. But I'm biased for a good reason. And that's because I know what kind of person he is.
And look, you mentioned, like, Pat Shurmur, he's seen success. Like, Sam Bradford's best year, his rookie year, was with Shurmur, right? He failed before as a head coach at Cleveland. But lots of guys have failed there. Even Bill Belichick. He did great with Minnesota last year with their revolving door. Like, for a head coach, he's a pretty good quarterback whisperer.
Love the Giants this year.
I didn't love the Giants.
But they're not a three-win team. We know that. They're much better than that.
8, 9?
I'll give you 8.
All right. I'll give you 8 as a Jets fan. That means 9 with a possible. Kind of like when you're playing. Elsewhere in the preseason, it's in high gear this weekend with a matchup between two of last year's most interesting young quarterbacks. Jimmy Jesus, also known as Jimmy Garoppolo, and Deshaun Watson both looked great last time they were on a field last season. With Jimmy G going undefeated and Deshaun Watson turning Houston into a scoring machine. Look, there's a small sample size, but expectations are, of course, sky high. Jimmy Garoppolo, when he signed his contract, was the biggest in the history of the league. And everyone, myself included, thinks if Deshaun Watson stays healthy, the sky could be the limit. I guess the question would be, who do you have greater expectations for this season? I talked to Brandon Whedon, who's backup quarterback with the Houston Texans. He's like, look, if Deshaun learns to get down when he slides, stay in the pocket a little bit more, he's got a chance to be the NFL's MVP. He's that good because he has the leadership quality, the football intelligence, the emotional intelligence to relate to guys. I think he's got some swag because even though college football doesn't necessarily translate to the National Football League, all those guys saw that he beat Alabama, he won a national championship for Clemson. Like, that carries some weight in the locker room of some young players. Like, this dude's got it. It's off his second ACL injury, and you got it. Remember, last year they put in the college offense, which really worked. They're going to try and make him into more of a pro-style quarterback. I think there could be some bumps along the way before he gets to his potential.
Wait, are you going Jimmy G here? Who will have the better season?
Yes.
Jimmy G?
Ooh. Yes, yes. Because I saw Matt Ryan as the MVP when Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator. I think that entire staff is outstanding. I think, you know, you got Goodwin as a potential elite wide receiver.
Whoa. Slow down. Marquise Goodwin is an elite receiver on the 49ers?
Yeah, potential.
Potential elite wide receiver. Look, they've rebuilt that thing from scratch. You look at the energy that Jimmy G had and how that team was on the path to being the number one or number two in terms of worst record in the National Football League. They win 5 against 3 playoff teams, and I'll grant you, the Rams shut it down week 17. Yeah. But they beat the Jags, and that was a hell of a Jags defense, and he lit them up. They beat the Tennessee Titans. That was a pretty good Tennessee Titans defense. And we saw in NFL films just his attention to detail, how he studied under the ultimate wizard. Like, I think Jimmy Garoppolo, he's been in the league longer. He has a better offensive system than the one we've seen in Houston. And he's going to be running the same system he ran last year, whereas it's going to be a little bit of a hybrid this year for Deshaun Watson. And he's not coming off of a debilitating knee injury, the second knee injury. So it's not me downgrading what Deshaun Watson is, the talent around him. It's just, I think it's a little bit of a bridge year in Houston.
Watson's got the better receivers, Will Fuller and Nuke Hopkins, obviously. Better running back as well, Lamar Miller. Easier division. Not the highest paid quarterback in the league. Do you know how much trash talk Jimmy G's going to hear? Dude, you are the highest paid quarterback in the league. You haven't played a season yet. And I do believe, and you guys can speak to this, I trash talk on the basketball court. Doug, you know that well. How much trash talk is Jimmy G going to hear about dating a porn star when the defensive ends are planting him in the grass on sacks?
None.
Stop it. Stop it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, some of them might actually give him props.
Yeah,
so it depends on who you
Depends on who's sacking.
But I honestly think that you know, if I have to pick between those two, I'm going with Houston. I mean, you know, I can't go against Deshaun. I think he's an exceptional quarterback. Being healthy, obviously, we're talking about the health. Everything's predicated on that. I would wonder, I'm very curious, if he is healthy, now all the analytics and everything that's involved, would you still pick Jimmy G as being more successful this upcoming season than Deshaun?
But that's not part of it.
Right? Well,
Fair enough. You can't. Like, look, when you have a crazy athletic, talented quarterback, and he's coming off a second ACL, but just even if he wasn't his second, but it's a second ACL, we don't know how he's going to be moving out there on the second week. I mean, you know how it is. When you come back from injury, you feel really good, and then the second week now.
But his accuracy last season was tremendous. I mean, this is a guy who lit up the Patriots, lit up the Seahawks. Greg, they got the easiest schedule in the NFL this season. Deshaun Watson's prime.
I'm all over Deshaun Watson. There's the numbers don't lie. When I look at the numbers and I see 61 completion percentage, and I'm talking about a rookie quarterback that only played. He only played six games, and his passer rating, 103, touchdown to interception ratio, 19-8. You give him a complete offseason and a full season to play, and it's his team at his disposal, and he has developed chemistry with those receivers that you mentioned, with that offense. How electric can this guy be?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we were salivating at wishing we could see and have more Deshaun Watson, and we got a little teench sample size of a splash, if you will, of how great this young man is going to be in this league. I think this season, with the expectations of that Houston has and how good their defense will be with all those guys coming back healthy.
If
it's always a factor. But I just like Deshaun Watson.
Look again, like, I just want to make sure this is clear. I think Deshaun Watson's amazing. I think he could change how we view this league, because it used to be you run the college offense, it doesn't work. But there is the questions, like that second year around when teams, yes, he gets a better relationship with his wide receivers. He gets more time to work, but also people have film on you, and that's the real challenge. You know, like, Vince Young was a Pro Bowler his first year, and I think Deshaun Watson, he was better during limited time than Vince Young was. The point is, they get the book on you, and suddenly year two is a lot harder. Then factor in coming off of the injury, and I think it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see. I think that Deshaun has a higher ceiling, but Garoppolo is going to have the better season. Welcome back. Greg Jennings, Rashad Jennings join me, as well as Jason McIntyre. Let's move to Kansas City, where the Patrick Mahomes experiment isn't off to the best start. With a lackluster preseason debut for the second-year quarterback, along with reports of some mental errors and other struggles during training camp. Even still, Andy Reid remains confident in Mahomes, saying, quote, he has the intestinal fortitude to run the Chiefs' offense. Guys, Andy Reid has been a quarterback whisperer his entire career, even as a head coach. You look at, you know, all the five NFC Championship games and the Super Bowl he went to in Philadelphia. Don McNabb was never crazy accurate, was never a top five quarterback in the league, but he found a way to get it done. He got it done with Kevin Cobb. He got it done with one of the Detmers. I can't remember which one, Coy or Ty, maybe Phil Detmer. No, it was Coy Detmer. And then he comes to Kansas City, and he makes it work with Alex Smith, a great regular season quarterback. And we all know that Alex Smith has his limitations. He's captain checkdown. But that fits the personality of Andy Reid. Like, look, Andy Reid used to work with Brett Favre, and he likes to think back, I'm a Brett Favre kind of guy. But he hasn't selected or had a Brett Favre as his quarterback. You know, coaches, as they get older, get a little bit more conservative. And it worked for them last year, right? You had Tyreek Hill takes the top off of defense. You go out and get Sammy Watkins, who I don't think he's ever going to be what he was billed to be, but he should be a good main option. You got Travis Kelce. You got a guy who led the league in running. Like, you got all these weapons. But when you have this big-armed young gunslinger who takes a lot of chances, there's a lot of rewards, but there's a lot of risk. And that's off-brand for Andy Reid. It's off-brand. Andy Reid is great regular season coach, sometimes limited by his conservative nature, and that's the ceiling for him at times in Philadelphia, and definitely has been the ceiling in Kansas City. And the idea that a young guy that didn't play winning football in college, uber talented, top five arm in the league, And he's a very good athlete. But I think this is a step back for the Kansas City Chiefs before they ever get to those two steps forward.
I would agree with that. A little step back, but is he a bad fit for the Chiefs? I think Andy Reid was in the war room when they traded up to draft him. I think Andy Reid was in the war room when they said, Alex Smith, goodbye, we're ready to start Holmes. I don't understand how it could be a bad fit. I mean, this is Andy Reid knows quarterbacks. You even said that. And he's got a guy with a cannon arm, Sammy Watkins, to stretch the field, Tyreek Hill in space. I don't see how there's a – I don't see anything negative here at all. I mean, you got a young quarterback, a great coach. Doug, I don't see it.
Have you – are you a – your cars, you front-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive?
I'm an all-wheel drive kind of guy.
All-wheel drive kind of guy. Yes, the tough streets of West Hollywood. That's very, very – you need that all-wheel drive to run over those potholes. Look, this is – Andy Reid's like a guy who drives front-wheel drive cars, right? Honda Accords, nothing wrong with him. Steady, safe, solid. And then all of a sudden, he gets behind the wheel of Skip Bayless's Corvette, and he hits the gas button. It's like, whoa, what's going on here? That's not what he's used to. And while it may be fun and cool to drive around for a weekend, to drive it every day to work, it doesn't fit who he is.
Yeah, I don't think that this is a bad fit. It's for us to see it. I think it has to play out. When I look at what Alex Smith provided for them, he provided leadership, the skill set, mobility, accuracy, all the things that every other 31 teams would be looking for in the NFL, and you just let it walk out the door. I think it's going to come back to bite him. I'm not saying Patrick Mahomes isn't the future because we know he is. He has literally, like you said, uber gifted and talent. Andy Reid's, his schemes, his verbiage, it's a lot for a young rookie guy.
You know, it's just kind of funny we're talking about a rookie quarterback now, because earlier we were talking about when do you play a rookie quarterback.
Year.
We agreed, most of us said second year. If you have the luxury to set him for a year, let them, allow them to learn a system that ebbs and flows, watching the film, the tape, get adjusted to the game itself. And then in that second year, if we feel he's ready to play, allow them to flourish. And that's exactly the recipe that I see Kansas City doing. So I like it. I think he's an exceptional talent. And he has a surrounding cast, defense and offense and special teams, that can support him, and it won't just all be on this kid. So I like it.
It's going to be fascinating to watch. He did light it up in last preseason and week 17, and he does have a ton of talent. Welcome back. Jason McIntyre is here for Last Call. Let's move to the Big Three, where the playoffs tip off tonight. Corey Maggette and top seed Power take on Tri-State. While feel-good story, Texas Tech star Andre Emmett and Three's Company face off the three-headed monsters. On the other side of the bracket, McIntyre, who you got?
I'm going with the three-headed monsters. And my guy, you know me as a shooter, Doug, in basketball, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, formerly Chris Jackson, the LSU legend. I like them tonight.
Never put yourself in Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf in the same sentence. I'm going with Power, top seed for reason. First, Nancy Lieberman, love her.
Yes.
Right? She's a great player in her own right. Then you got Corey Maggette, Katina Mobley, and Big Baby Davis, three of the top 10 scorers in the league. Last time I checked, it's 3-on-3.
Big Baby Davis can play.
Yes, Big Baby Davis is in shape.
Yeah, when are you getting
round
out there,
is in shape.
Doug, when are you getting out there? I see those biceps. I know you're working out.
Yeah, I'm
sleeveless
shirt. I'm more
walk
namaste,
in the building.
More Stop. Yoga. Hey, Stop. Ryan Gomes can get you buckets, too.
He
former
can.
Providence star. Remember,
Indeed.
He came back to light up UConn. He's from Waterbury.
We need more basketball segments.
We do need more basketball
segments. I will bust you up.
Cowherd Whitlock back on Monday. You're welcome for us this week.